Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Welcome to Speaking of Reliability. This is Fred Schenkelberg.
And this is Chris Jackson. And Fred, I think you were talking about a friend of yours who's got a couple of questions about some unexpected accelerated life testing results.
I don't know that. I guess you could say it was unexpected. The heart of the question was they had a high stress condition that generated 8 failures and a nominal condition, which wasn't clear to me in the message whether it was actual use data, but they also had 8 failures.
Right.
And the heart of the question was, am I on the right track to calculate a acceleration factor between these two stresses? And I think the intention was then to use it a variety of ways. But it kind of sparked a number of issues to me. But the heart of the question was, the high stress condition fit a Weibull distribution nicely, as expected, because it was a wear out mechanism for a mechanical system. I find that if it's not Weibull, in those kind of circumstances, there's probably something really funky going on here that's making it not. It's a pretty safe bet to start with that, and then be proven otherwise is kind of the way I approach that phenomena of wear mechanisms. But he said that the software package didn't like the Weibull distribution as much as the log logistics distribution for the nominal stress, and very quickly said the underlying failure mechanisms are the same in both sets of conditions and on all the samples. Okay, that's great. And then showed me a chart. It's sort of like there's different software packages do it different, but they'll try every distribution that they have and give you a goodness of fit, an Anderson-Darling score, essentially. And some packages will give you 3 or 4 different goodness of fit things, and they won't always agree with each other for whatever reason, for good reason. But so he said, well, Weibull's number 3 on the nominal conditions, and the log logistic is number 1. The question was, can I use 2 different distributions to create the acceleration factor? And I said, no, really don't want to do that. But there's a couple other questions here. So then we went into a couple of things. But the things I saw in this question, one was, in this kind of circumstance, if the failure mechanism is the same, it really should be the same pattern of failures, the same distribution. Second, with 8 points, you don't have enough data to tell what distribution it is, unless you have historical data that says this is always going to be this, or this is what our pattern has been in the past. This is understanding the failure mechanism. This is what it should be. But 8 points, I think you need something like 800 good, solid fitting points to tell the difference between a Weibull and a log normal distribution, because the difference really only appears way out in the tails. Or something like that, some ridiculous number. And then the third point was, with only 2 stresses, it's kind of dicey to determine an acceleration factor. You can, but there's the more advanced tools of fitting both lines and the relationship between stress and location, you don't have enough points. There's a danger of overfitting it. And then there were questions about, well, what's the nature of these 8 points, right? Is that 8 samples were run to failure in both sets of conditions, or was there some samples that weren't failed? And how are you handling the sensor data? So anyway, that was my litany of thoughts to talk about in this piece. Did I miss anything with that, Chris?
So let me say it back to you to make sure I got it right. So you got your colleagues been doing accelerated live testing, and just to be clear, that's to do something like turn up the temperature or turn up the stress or turn up the vibration to make time to failure testing go faster, I should say, so that you can replicate, you know, years worth of actual use in a day or something, some shorter period of time. And he got, correct me if I'm wrong, he got 8 failure points at accelerated conditions and 8 failure points in actual use conditions.
Right.
And you're not sure if that was the entire data set. So, for example, we don't know if he had 8 failures out of a fleet of 100, for example.
Or a fleet of 20, you know, we don't know.
Or 9, where most of the things have failed. And so with 8 data points, especially if there's sensored data points, we don't know if that's the case. It's very difficult to be able to conclude with absolute certainty which probability distribution is going to be a better fit than the other. And especially when the software gives you numbers which are relatively similar. So what I mean by that is if you get a goodness of fit number from SOP, and it can be all any number of metrics out there that claim to be really good at telling you if one bell curve fits better than another. If the numbers are relatively close, that just means the software is itself confused. There's not a lot to go on to say it's definitely this versus it's definitely that. So I think you're saying that Weibull distribution was the winner for actual use conditions. No, sorry, the accelerated conditions.
Mm-hmm.
And LogLogistic was the winner for real life conditions, but Weibull was a close third.
Right.
And if that's the case, it just sounds to me like Weibull distribution could be the right distribution for both test conditions, especially if there's sensor data.
Well, one reason I lean towards Weibull in that case is, one, its underlying mechanism is a wear out. Two, there's not enough data to tell really what distribution it is. And Weibull is a lot easier to interpret and graph. And I just have an affinity for it because it has informative parameters for lack of any other reason. But it really could be, a gamma distribution. You just don't know. You don't have enough data here to really tell which one it is. So, but the underlying assumption is that, yes, they need to be the same in order for you to move forward. And I think that was key. Now, there was the other issue, though, and it is it 8 points out of some number, and how is the sensor data? And if I read the question literally, it was, I have 8 times the failure, and I want to just take the characteristic life from the Weibull for both of those and make that a ratio, and that's my acceleration factor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's it. But if the use conditions is 8 out of 1,000, that's a different point on that distribution than 8 out of 9 that you ran in the lab.
Mm-hmm.
I think that ignoring the sensor data is at great peril to create that acceleration, to do that calculation. You have to account for the ones that haven't failed properly. And it's way too easy. And I've done it. I've got a nice little data set from I got my first 8 failures from the experiment I'm running, and I had 25 other ones running, and I didn't know what to do with sensor data. I hadn't even heard of that concept. So I took my 8 points and plotted them. I got a nice, good fit regression wise, and it covered the whole spectrum, and I was happy. And my boss came in and says, "Well, how many didn't fail? Are they still running?" Mm-hmm. And sent me back to the textbooks.
So, and just to clarify, you're talking, what you're essentially saying, if I heard you correctly, is that if you have 8 failures out of 1,000, that means that the failures you're observing are the really early failures, not even the infant mortality failures, the very in this case, if it's 8 out of 1,000, it's almost the first percentile of failures, not quite, but close to it. But if it's 8 out of 10, you're capturing the early failures, the typical failures, and sort of the few products that are somehow still surviving towards the back end of the curve. And as we all know, early failures can be completely different in terms of the way they fail, the failure mechanism, when compared to the vast majority. But as reliability engineers, we actually are mostly interested in the early failures. We're not interested in having half our engines fail before we service them, for example.
Yeah. I mean, if the failure mechanism's the same, let's just say we don't know how the test is set up or run or whatever, but let's say it is actually the same underlying failure mechanism in all the circumstances. 8 out of 1,000 is still that early tail. It may not, it may be exactly the same slope, essentially, for the distribution. It's just its location is going to, but if you ignore the sensor data, those first 8 points fit as if that was the total population.
Right, yeah.
Gives you a very different answer because it's only looking at that first percentile.
Mm-hmm.
And so taking the mean or the average of those 8 points and comparing it to the average of 8 out of 10 is, to me, that just makes it look like I'm comparing one where I have data across the entire curve and the other one where I only have the first percent. And ignoring, at your peril, ignoring the sensor data gives you a false ratio.
Right. So it's just like, this is like saying you're trying to measure, like, or trying to learn something about the average height of human beings. You get 1,000 people and you select the 8 shortest of those people, measure those people, and take the average of those 8 really short people. That will give you a gross underestimate of, you know, average height or typical height. And conversely, if you do exactly the same survey, exactly the same test, where you're trying to measure random people to assess average height, if you randomly select 8, but you measure all 8 and all 8 of those go into your equation to work out what, or estimate of what the mean height is or average height is, you'll get, you are going to be comparing apples and oranges, essentially. In the first scenario, you're deliberately limiting your measuring efforts to the really short people, and that's what we call bias. And when you exclude sensor data, you are essentially only taking notice of those systems which have failed really, really early, which is, and we've all been there, we've all done it, it's very easy to do.
Yep.
But when, and to be fair, I don't think your friend has said if he has actually done that, but it's just an open question, correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah. Yep. Right. No, exactly. And give him benefit of doubt, they were dealing with the sensor data properly. Mm-hmm. But it's something to keep in mind because it is so easy to do. The other part that is the reliance on the software to say which distribution it is. And I've run into that a bunch of different cases.
Yeah.
Is now it's a tool, folks. It's the software packages are a tool to help us do the math and just do it quicker. And in some cases, I mean, there's some algorithms that really is exceedingly difficult to do by hand and take you for a long, long time. And so computers aid us in doing processes that we otherwise couldn't do in a feasible way. But the idea is that it's just a tool. You got to know when and how to use it and how to set it up and how it's making its own decisions and everything else. And if you blindly trust the fitting algorithm, you're not doing your job is kind of my message. Is you got to think this through. What's underlying this? What's causing the failures? What's the nature of this phenomena? Is the data set compromised in some various ways? Is it clipped, for example?
Mm-hmm.
You know, one group I worked with is they clipped their data 2 different ways. One is if it failed within the first month, it was early life failure, and we don't count those as failures, so we just throw those out.
Because the customers won't care if they fail in the first month. So that doesn't count.
Well, it was the reliability group, and they blamed those on the quality group, and the quality group then had just that data set to work with and ignored the rest of it, and so they didn't count it. And then if it failed off of the distribution they expected it to be, they called it an outlier and eliminated it.
Right.
It just, and a lot of them got eliminated. It was like 25% of the data sets were just tossed out because it didn't fit.
Right.
And like, how much, let's think about what you're trying to achieve here. Are you just trying to confirm what you think you want to see?
Yep.
You know, so the back to the question is he has two sets of data, and if he does the regression right, you get two Weibull plots and they're parallel to each other, which is all great. And the difference between the two of them, that separation, the ratio between the characteristic life on both of those, is essentially the acceleration factor from your accelerated conditions. And you can use that number to estimate the other one and back the other way. But then it comes up to the final issue I want to talk about is, I mean, there are algorithms where you use all 16 data points and your sensor data and the stress levels. You code the data by what this data point failed at 8,615 cycles, and it was at nominal stress. And this one failed at XYZ, and it was at high stress conditions. And you use the stress level as a variable in the fitting, and you can fit all the data all at once. The trouble is that you only have two stresses. And so you're gonna, it's not overfitting. You got 16 data points, you got five variables, you know, two Weibull parameters for each curve plus the separation. And that's not a lot of data for trying to fit five things. But it is a proper way to fit it, is because if the failure mechanisms are the same, they should be parallel distributions, just offset. And that's what we're interested in. And there are algorithms that allow you to fit that. But I think with 2 points, it's you. I don't know what's the right way to phrase the problem there.
Not enough, thanks, mate. I mean, I think you're talking about, if anyone's done accelerated live testing where you're trying to, for example, crank up the temperature to condense a year's worth of actual use into a day's worth of test time. And it can be temperature, it can be stress, it can be whatever parameter drives the failure mechanism you're observing or studying. And it can be fatigue, it can be corrosion, it can be any number of failure mechanisms, but you need to understand the physics of failure. And when you do accelerated live testing, you need to confirm that you know the physics of failure, which is what you're getting to. You can't just go, all right, we'll test it at 25 degrees Celsius, which is room temperature, use conditions, and then we'll test it at 50 degrees Celsius, and we'll assume that temperature is driving acceleration, an accelerated time to failure and everything else. You need to actually go 25, 40, 50, 60, or typically you want to have at least three different accelerated states to make sure the model that you think is driving time to failure is actually valid. If you only have two, like you say, if you only have 25 degrees Celsius and 50 degrees Celsius, well, any line can fit that because...
Yeah, two data points and you get a perfect fit.
The line is beautiful.
You can't tell if it's not linear. You can't tell if there's some other phenomena creeping in there, or you miss something in the modeling, or all kinds of weird stuff can happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, so those were kind of the main points I pulled out of that. And I didn't get back to him on all of those points. The more I thought about it, it was like, this might make a good topic. So,
Fair enough.
It's one of those various questions we receive. And I know I enjoy getting these questions, and I suspect all the other hosts of the show do too. And you can actually be a part of the conversation. Literally, we've been talking about it for a few weeks now. And I think it's now live. Or the first podcast where we mentioned it, I've now posted. So hopefully we'll get a couple of questions, and hopefully this is your chance to join the conversation. So be bold, be the first one to hit that SpeakPipe widget and leave us a question, and we'll play it on the air. We'll also try to get back to you right away. So it's at ascendoreliability.com/go/SOR. And I did get a feedback that I should put it on more places on the site. I'll have to add it to the show notes pages too. Add it to my list of things to do. But there's a little upper right-hand corner of the go/SOR page. There's a SpeakPipe widget that you hit the appropriate button, and it will record your device's microphone. I think it goes up to 90 seconds. And so it's completely an experiment. And but it's a way for you, as we've been saying for the last 650 episodes, please join the conversation. So we would love to actually hear your voice, and you can join the conversation that way. It could be about regression. We could geek out about that, or you could ask us about, you know, team leadership or whatever. We'd love to hear from you. So enough with that. Hopefully the regression analysis is moving forward and they sorted out what they needed to do. And hopefully the podcast expanded that a little bit, gave you a couple of cautions of when you go into to doing this kind of work. Mm-hmm. So with that, Chris, I think we can wrap this one up.
Thanks for taking the time to have a conversation, Fred.
No problem. Thanks, Chris.
Cheers, mate.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation if you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show. Please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.